This is RSBNB Update, episode 560, recorded Thursday, March 31st, 2016, a discussion on deicide. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update on the week that the God Wars Dungeon 2 has been released into game. Colton is here, as per usual.
I'm back.
For one more episode regularly, this last episode.
Yes, correct.
But also joining us this week to cover God Wars Dungeon 2 is Dave, a.k.a. Arcane, I believe, on RS?
Yep. What's up going on, guys?
Excellent. And, of course, Mr. Bistro, who you guys all know from RSBNB Informer. He loves the combat and PVM-related things about RuneScape, so that is, of course, why we got him here on this episode.
I do love it.
Thank you for being here with us, all you guys. So, God Wars Dungeon 2, this update. Off the bat impressions before we go too far deep into it. Yay, nay, excellent, makes me sad. What's the
love
rating?
Love it, but needs lore.
Okay.
It's a lot better than I thought it would be. I was going into it fully expecting sort of a raids tier type deal. But to be quick, I went, I soloed all four bosses. It was challenging, but it wasn't impossible. So I would say, coming from someone who doesn't like PVM, it's a good update.
How about you, Mr. Bistro?
I was really on the fence with it, but after playing into it a little bit more, I ended up liking it more and more. So I think it's something that really grows on you.
Alrighty. And my general sense of this is that if you were remaking God Wars Dungeon and you were remaking it in 2016, this is exactly how you would do it. It still retains, you know, the aspects we all like from the older ones while bringing in modern RuneScape combat and creatures to it. So I think it's generally headed the right direction. So you access God Wars Dungeon 2 at the Heart, which is where the seasonal event took place 2 weeks ago. You can use the little teleport tokens that you got if you want to get there quickly. You got 25 of them for completing the Tale of Gelenor. So anyways, four factions here, Saren, Sliske, Zaros, and Zamorak, each of them all fighting for control over the various regions of the Heart. And when you're down there, they are actually running about in little packs and are working on capturing control points around the dungeon. Did you guys notice this off the bat when you were there?
Yes, I did.
I noticed they were coming out of the portal. I didn't realize there was a purpose. I thought it was just kind of a creative way to spawn enemies instead of just making them appear. I didn't know there was like a functionality or like a control point capture, though.
Yeah, see, initially I forgot about the fact that this is part of, you know, the intrigue and uniqueness of God Wars Dungeon 2 is that, yes, they come out of the portal, but they also capture the control points. And if you look around the various sides of the Heart, you'll see banners displaced. So if a certain faction is successful in capturing that area by standing there remaining in non-combat for what I believe is 30 seconds, they will capture that area.
Okay, that makes sense, because I was trying to find where Saren was, and I went the direction of where it is, and I saw, like, Zeros banners. I'm like, well, this doesn't make sense, but the portal's here, so what's going on? Okay, that makes sense now. Got it.
Yeah, so, I mean, last time we saw Jagex try the smart NPCs thing, it was at the Black Knights event in Falador, and we ended up with Black Knights dancing around with each other, so I think this has gone off a bit better than that. But, so there's that, and you can, of course, choose which faction you're going to work with, whether it be Sliske, Zaros, Zamorak, or Saren, and then after that, you can help them capture those various points. So that's one thing you can do in the God Wars Dungeon. The second thing that you can do is you can go to, let's just call him a kind of a Slayer Master kind of person at the central platform of the Heart, and he'll give you a bounty in your chosen faction, and you need to kill 100 of those creatures for that faction. And that's another way to help out whichever faction you want to side with. So you can do that. Or, of course, you can just go down there and not be bound to anyone and just get kill count as you please. So
that's... Now, is there a limit to how many bounties you can do, like, daily or weekly? Or can you just, like, keep going, just like a Slayer task?
And I believe
just,
it's,
like, max it out?
I believe it's 5 every day.
Yes.
You can get 5 every day? Okay.
Yes.
And is every bounty basically kill 1,000 of
100.
X? 100, okay. Yes. So basically you can kill 500 things and get that reputation for the day.
Or 20 of the boss, because each boss kill counts for 25 of the respective.
Now you can't
kills.
You can't get reputation if you don't have a bounty or you don't kill a boss. Like if I just went and I just started killing Zeros minions without getting a bounty, that doesn't really count for anything but kill count, correct?
You can get reputation in other ways as well. Is that what your question?
Yeah, I'm just sort of curious. I mean, I can figure it out. I don't want to, you know.
I mean, you can get reputation from just killing the bosses. I don't know if it's a one-time thing or if each time you kill it.
Turning in the coins.
It's a one-time reward for killing the boss.
Turning in the seals to a faction also gives you, of the opposing boss's seals to a certain faction also gives you reputation. I think summoning forces with the yellow dust on the battlefield gains you reputation. So you can gain reputation in a variety of ways.
Gotcha. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and I mean, when I said this feels like exactly what a God Wars dungeon would feel like today if it was released, I was mainly referring to the reputation and, of course, all the various other things relating to bounties that you can do. So... that is probably, in addition, I mean, to just having a new God Wars dungeon is probably the thing I'm most happy about. And within the reputation system itself, you are able to do or get a variety of rewards as you move through it, up for a maximum of 1,000 points here. As we see Colton here, you already have 1,140 points for Saren. Is that the only one you've been working on?
It's the one I've mainly been focusing on because it's the one I'm most interested in fighting for.
Oh, all right. And other examples of moving through the reputation system: at 100 reputation, you get 25% drop increase chance. 250 is a champion summon. 500 is a pocket item slot that provides protection from that faction, so kind of like the Shard of Zaros does for the main God Wars dungeon, except only for one faction here. Then at 1,000, it's a 50% drop increase. 2,000 is armor upgrading, so you can make the advanced armor that we'll talk about in just a bit. 2,500 is some invention materials, which is going to be very interesting. The Saren one, for example, at 3,000, you get a faction-specific toy, and it's called the Daystone. I wonder what that does. But
yeah, it'll be
there's a Nightstone, I think, for Zeros, I believe. And I'm wondering if that sort of introduces like a nighttime thing, because it says it changes the appearance and everything's like obviously night. I don't know. I have to check it out.
Yeah, that would make sense, actually, because remember, as happened in the tail end of 2015, the day and night bug from construction was basically an unintended feature of being able to convert your house and then see the rest of the world in that light. And they said, we will be bringing in an item that allows you to do this. So this is
there you go.
Those items.
Yep.
At 3,500, you get a 75% drop increase. 4,000 is a cosmetic override. And at 4,500 is a 50% kill count reduction. So you only need 20 instead of 40.
That's really nice.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then at 5,000, 100% drop increases the drop from, of course, the general, and also a title for each of them. So these are fairly uniform throughout all the factions. So, I mean, even if you didn't want to, fight the generals at the end of the day, you could definitely spend a lot of time down here just doing combat and immersing yourself in the environment itself. So I think that's also positive because, I mean, not everyone is going to be up for, you know, a huge boss fight, right? So
right. So you can pretty much get all the rewards by just going down there and doing like the daily Slayer bounty stuff and not even touch a boss.
Yeah, I mean, unless you want armor and stuff, right?
Right, so, exactly.
And armor is already crashing on the Grand Exchange from their initial prices, so I mean, that kind of says the direction that's going to go. Which
I've got some thoughts and sort of some theories on why that is.
Oh, good. We'll save that for the rewards.
Yep.
Unless there's anything else in the actual heart, I'd like to go through some of the boss mechanics from those of you guys who fought them. Colton, you didn't fight the actual NPCs or the generals, did you?
Oh, yes, I did. Oh, I got all four.
Oh, so I'm the only one that didn't. All right. As I said last night, I rely on my co-host to help me with things that I don't want to do.
There you go.
So, all right. So let's start with the Saren boss, Hellweir. Mr. Bistro, give us a brief rundown of how Hellweir works.
Well, this is kind of like a wolf, bear, deer-esque looking boss, and frankly, probably the most annoying to me. Mostly
does require
because
80
of
magic
one...
to get to.
Yes, it requires 80 magic to get to. The most annoying part is his ability that spawns these mushrooms that look like they're going to poison you, but they actually are giving you just a flat damage rate instead of an actual poison effect. And those take up a good majority of the battlefield for the kill. Another ability is he'll kind of, I think, do a roar and cause a couple wolves to spawn. This is kind of a useless special ability in my opinion, because you can just literally have them walk underneath the boss and then just do kind of barrage attacks and hit all three of them at the same time. And he also has a clawing attack, which looks pretty cool, but it's also pretty basic. But when it comes down to it, it really feels a lot like a God Wars fight compared to the other bosses that are in RuneScape, so that part is enjoyable. And it's overall a fairly fun fight. It's just slightly annoying.
All right. What would you say the average kill time on Hellweir is? With moderate to decent gear, of course.
It really depends. It depends on like what kind of armor you're going in on or going in with. And I'd say it's pretty much like that for all the bosses, and I guess I can get into that a little bit later. If you're using magic, I would say maybe like 4 minutes with good DPS. As of right now, if you're really good at DPS, you could probably get that down really, really low, probably like 1.5-2 minutes.
Oh, all right.
As a solo kill, because I did all my stuff solo. I don't know if everyone else did.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So overall, what would you say is the number one thing a person ought to know when going into kill Hellweir? I mean, obviously you're gonna bring the usuals: Rocktail, Cerebrews, potions, overloads.
But I would say I would definitely go magic, and I would also go DPS. The DPS, because you're going to want to like take this boss down relatively quickly, because it's going to save you food and you'll be able to stay there longer. Magic also, because the wolves are weaker to that, the little minion wolves called on that special attack. And I just seem to have better luck with that than I did range.
All right, fair enough. Any specific spell or?
Well, obviously asphyxiate. That's really, really good for the boss when the wolves are not there. But otherwise, you can use that chain ability, which really works well. I would not recommend using that. I believe it's that sunshine ultimate ability, where that beam spawns, and for like it's 10 seconds you have that extra damage. I would go with the more mobile, like Metamorphosis one, or some other ultimate ability that's not going to keep you spot locked in case of mushrooms spawning in the wrong place.
All right. And is there any downside to using, say, ice over blood or fire over earth?
Well, I actually had a lot of luck with air. I think a polypore staff would be sufficient for this, as long as you have like an arcane stream necklace, and probably the level 80 power armor. You could go with Sea Singers too, but that's not going to help your DPS as much as it would the next sets.
Alrighty. Colton and Dave, you guys have any thoughts on Hellier?
I would agree with the fact that to me this is the most frustrating of all the bosses, even though it's the one that I want the stuff from.
I can second that.
Yeah, it's just a bit of a pain. The mushrooms are the most frustrating to me. Like, I always get stuck in them, and I'm not a great surging person or escaping. I'm not good with those abilities, so I'm not as smooth with those sorts of transitions. So I often get caught if it's done in rapid succession.
Okie dokie.
To put it in perspective, when I went there a couple days ago, when it first came out to get my kills, Xeros and Sliske, I both did. I didn't die at all. I got it my first try. Zami, I died once, and Saren, I died 3 times. So definitely, I think Saren is the hardest one. Being a max level player, I can advise the max level players out there. I'm not really good at PVM, but there are some mechanics, like the wolves. I didn't even worry about those because they deal so little damage, you'll pretty much out-heal it with Soul Split, or if you have a Blood Necklace. Again, if you're going to be – you asked if spells matter. If you are having trouble with healing, I would go Blood Spells just for that little extra. But yeah, I think Saren is my least favorite, even though it is my favorite. It's definitely the hardest for sure. I think it would be a lot quicker though if you have like a tank. Just solo speaking, it's probably the most difficult.
Yeah, I also want to mention that this boss, the minions aren't as important as it is for Gregorovic. That's extremely important, so there will be a difference there.
All right, well then, would you guys like to talk about Gregorovic next, since we mentioned that?
Sure.
All right, Gregorovic requires 80 prayer. So what are we looking at differently at Gregorovic than, say, Hellwear?
Well, this boss, first of all, he looks amazing. His backstory is pretty interesting. This one... It's really tough to say if you're going to – what kind of style you should use, whether it's ranged or magic. I'm leaning towards range because I'm more familiar with DPS in that style. But I would not recommend melee because you will be needing to do a lot of running around to fight his shadow attack, which spawns I think 3 of them, and you have to kill those. Otherwise, he'll just keep teleporting around in the room and really starting to put a dent in your food supply. And then he also has another ability where he'll summon a shade, which you should kill right away, because if he like siphons off of the shade or absorbs it, then he is permanently buffed for that kill.
Oh, wow.
Which is... which is important because it spawns more than once. So if you keep missing these, it gets harder and harder. I think this boss was relatively fun, probably my second favorite of the 4 new bosses. I'm leaving out this ceiling falling ability, which is similar to Twin Furies, which we'll also get to. But... that just kind of reminds me almost of the next ability in the shadow phase, mm-hmm. Where you just have to kind of avoid those spots during that special attack and just keep moving around. But yes, DPS is important for killing those minions here. Otherwise, go for Grigorovic, but the focus should be on the minions whenever they are there, 100%.
All right, so basically then just DPS those down with ranged, and it's relatively simple. Avoid the falling attacks, and you're good to go.
Yep. And I would say, like, chaotic crossbows and up are really beneficial here. I managed to do it with just chaotic crossbows and royal bolts just fine. I also have the dungeoneering sniper farsight, or the highest necklace for that too. And I actually just used tank armor, and it seemed to go fairly good.
All right, that sounds good. Dave and Colton?
I want to say I ranged all the bosses. I'm going to give my two cents. I would suggest going dual wield rather than two-handed, just because you want to take the aggro off of the red minion when it comes. That's the one that buffs him whenever he absorbs it. You want to have attack speed. It's no damage difference. You want the attack speed. You want, because as soon as you hit him, you pull the aggro off of Grigorovic, and that's right. All you really want to do.
And
so if you're gonna lose maybe a second or two if you go in with like a Nox bow, but if you have Ascensions, you just want to. You basically just want to distract the minions, because as soon as you do that, then you can burst them down. But if you're going for sustainability and you're going for a lot of kills, you're just going to want that attack speed just to pull the aggro off him, and then you can deal with him, and then you can keep going.
Yeah, and I mean, this is something that we've known since the day Evolution of Combat came out, is that if you want the best DPS, the best thing for you to do is to go dual wielding. So that's probably the tactic I'd imagine you want to take for both of these bosses. So
yeah, I mean, the actual damage increase, and Bistro can probably... back me up here, is like very slim. I mean, if it's better, it's probably by about 2%, depending on the gear you have. But it all just depends situational, because like Noxbow is good for a lot of other bosses, because you can get a high initial hit and get it down if you're going in like phases or whatever. But for this attack speed, you're definitely going to want the dual wield. So
yeah. I did all the bosses with range as well, but I used my Noxbow and I didn't have any trouble with Grigorovic. I mean, maybe it's just ticks were...
I'm not saying you're going to notice it. I'm just like kind of theory crafting here. Like technically with the game's mechanics, I mean, you're probably not going to notice it.
Technically.
But I mean, just,
technically. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, this all, of course, is factoring in a positive internet connection under 100 milliseconds ping and dealing with that tick rate in the game. So
right. And the thing is like... it could be different, because when I did it, I think it spawned like four times, and sometimes it was like maybe six squares away. Other times it was literally one square away, and if I didn't hit it, he would absorb, because he was teleporting around with those other shadows, and it just spawned. So, I mean, you could be anywhere from five squares to react to like two. So, I mean, it's a combination of ping, reaction time, attack speed. So it's kind of hard to pinpoint, really, but...
Do we know how much of a buff he gets each time he siphons off that, or is it just kind of gathered?
I don't know the actual number for sure.
You know, this is one thing I was thinking about when this came out, is that, you know, inherently each NPC and each player has their attack and defensive ratings, and it'd be really nice if we could get some kind of a resistance viewer to see how effective our attacks are and how much resists are on this person, so that, you know, maybe we can debuff them a bit or something. But
I mean, it would be kind of cool, like with the little health bar they have on it, just have like their stats, just like you kind of see with your prayer if you have your modifications slider up. Just sort of see like what their attack level
is,
what their defense is.
Or,
and then like as soon as stuff happens, it goes up, goes down, and that way you have some sort of judge, and you know, you can act accordingly.
Or even just let that lunar spell do it, that shows, you know, monster hit points and levels and everything like that. The monster examine one, you can put it on that and just do it once, and there you go. So that's just a little thing going forward that I've wanted to see for a while relating to combat.
Yeah.
Anything else on Grigorovic, and then we'll move on to the Twin Furies?
I'd say before we go any farther, you can definitely tell that a lot of these special attacks have been taken from other places in RuneScape. For instance, the Grigorovic shade that spawns that gives him the ability, you kind of had to kill that kind of like how the Queen Black Dragon, you have to kill the shades there before the time freezes. That's very similar. The ceiling's falling, very similar to many bosses.
And that was also in that quest.
Yeah.
So is that a positive thing or a negative thing that we're seeing reused mechanics like that in God Wars Dungeon 2?
I would say it's a positive thing because this place, God Wars 2 and God Wars the original, are the places people go to start their bossing. And this will really teach them some of the mechanics that they will see again now. It's a little bit lazy, but I can understand why they would do it.
All right.
That's my 2 cents on it. Yep.
The way that I see it, and I've seen it for a while, especially when they really started going boss heavy in RS, is the game's framework only supports so many mechanics. Less, I would think, than your typical MMO like WoW or whatever. I think it's limited to the tick system. I think they could do a lot more if it wasn't on a tick system. Now, I'm not saying they need to change that, but I'm just saying with people, I've heard so many people that are like, oh my gosh, it's just the same stuff. It's the same stuff. You kind of have to look back and, or, you know, take a step back and look at the bigger picture and say, this is, you know, technically you can't get too involved with the mechanics because it would become unplayable after a while. And with most of these mechanics, you do need like a perfect ping, because if there's, with any of the new God Wars 2 bosses, especially the Twin Furies, if you've got like a 50 ping, you're going to get caught by the charger in that. And we'll get to that later. But I'm just saying, like, the game, the framework, the way it's built around ticks is definitely restrictive on what kind of mechanics. So I think they're trying to do their best to sort of refresh but still kind of keep the general concept of what they've done in the past.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be clear here, is that if you look at everything relating to bossing and you were to build a spreadsheet of the various mechanics, you would only notice that if you built that spreadsheet or if you've been to all these bosses. If you're the first time going to God Wars Dungeon 2, you're going to think, oh my, these are the most interesting attacks I've ever seen in RuneScape. Wow, this is a lot for a game that, you know, was just rebranded by many people in their younger days as a game that where you just sit back, point and click, and let combat do its own work. So,
and I think they keep it fresh by, say, they have a pool of, you know, 30 different mechanics. They can sort of mix and match that up, and like the law of probability and statistics, I mean, that's seriously like thousands of combinations. You could do anywhere from 3 mechanics per fight to 6 and have it different combinations. You could have it situational on what happens. I mean, it really is endless, but they can't really introduce too many new mechanics into the system. They can only sort of rearrange it and make it more sort of nested within the code, which I think is fine, and they've done it very well. So,
all right. Time to move on to the Twin Furies then?
Yes.
All right. So the Twin Fury is, of course, the Zamorakian boss, and that one requires 80 ranged in order to access. So what have we got here?
Well, you're fighting two generals technically in this boss fight. Right away, one of the abilities, the charge one, I noticed is a lot like the Calphite King. Just this time, it's one of them jumping off the walls. Another one, the ceiling will collapse, and then another one is, they'll come together and they'll start to charge, and you'll see their like own action bar kind of like begin to charge up before they do an attack. And that one I would recommend just DPS them and then move out of the way. I'd say this boss fight is probably the simplest of all of them when it comes to the mechanics, because they're just very easy to avoid if you have a good internet connection. I would definitely recommend melee, DPS armor. It can be a pretty fast kill. Just hold them close and move out of the way when you need to. That's
hold them close
all there
and
is
tight,
to this fight.
Give them a good hug.
Yeah.
All right. Caveats aside from just DPSing them down fast enough, or no one hit KOs, or
not really. They don't they don't seem to hit all that hard. There's one situation when they are charging, the field gets shrunken down because there will be a square flame going around the entire arena that will shrink it down. But at that point, you should just be focusing on attacking them anyway because they're not attacking you back. They're charging. So really, it's pretty simple.
All righty. Dave, Colton, thoughts on this one?
I have one question. With the ceiling fall mechanic, is there any way to efficiently mitigate that damage, or do you just have to eat through it?
I just ate through it myself. It's not that big of a deal.
Because I noticed there's little pockets, and there seems to be like some gaps in between. I didn't know if it's less if you stand in between that rather than actually where it's falling, or what the deal was with that.
Well, I'm sure it is less damage, but I don't think it would be a significant difference. You should still be focusing on DPS at that point because it'll benefit you more to do that and just recoup that through a soul split. Or any ability that would heal you while attacking.
Okay, sounds good. Colton, anything on these, or is this really the simplest one there is?
I mean, it's fairly straightforward. This probably was honestly, next to Hellweir, my least favorite fight, because I don't like unavoidable damage. That it's just like I really don't have a way of preventing it. Like, if I can, by my own skill and ability in and like prowess and battle, if I can avoid damage, I think that that's the best way to do it. But I've just felt like with the Furies, it's like you sort of hit a ceiling with how much damage you can prevent.
Right.
And, it just kind of, I don't know. I didn't really enjoy the fight too much. And I only killed a few because I got the legs and I tellied out immediately.
Wow.
Yeah. That was the only drop I got, and much to my dismay, they were still haven't sold.
What?
For 1.5
what?
Mil. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I got them, and they were priced at 30 mil. And I was like, yeah, 30 mil. Tossed them in there. I was like, yeah, I'll leave them in there. And then I was like, man, that sucks. And I reduced the price to 20 mil. Left them in there for a while. Nothing.
Yeah, I would say this was the boss that a lot of people were farming just because of the simplicity of it and the chance to get those new items and hopefully flip them for a really good price.
That doesn't appear to be happening.
Unfortunately.
All right, so let's move then to Vindicta and Gorvik, the Zaros generals requiring 80 attack to access. So, anything special here now that we came from the boring Twin Furies?
This fight is probably the most lackluster on mechanics. It's also slightly hilarious. I'll get to it. Don't worry.
Alrighty.
The first attack is a purple flame, that comes from, Gorvik. He'll fly through every once in a while and cast a wall of flame, which all dragons love to do, walls of flame, and you just really have to walk out of the way of that, and that fire damage is a magic based damage. However, I would definitely recommend either doing a pray against melee or a pray against or just soul split.
I think soul split is probably the way to go for all these.
But the second attack, it's kind of a whirl from Vindicta. She'll kind of like swing her blade around, and that's what deals the most damage from her. It can be upwards to around 3K. So it's either good to kind of sidestep out of there or to just kind of tank it, I guess, if you're only in there for a couple kills. The next attack, Gorvik will fly through and literally take a crap on your head.
Excuse me?
Yes. I don't know if anyone else noticed it, But it happened to me my second time through, not the first time, but the second time it flew through and something landed on the head of my character with his shadow going across the field. And I'm just like, did he actually just take a shit on me? Like, what? That is the most out of place mechanic I think I've seen in this entire
So this Vindicta flies around and Gorvek flies around and something drops onto your head.
Something drops onto your head.
And what color is it?
I didn't look at the color. It's either a rock or he's actually taking a poop. With Jagex's humor, it could go either way.
this is very true.
But, yeah, so that's kind of weird. Those are his two attacks in the first phase, and Vindicta really has the twirly attack. The second phase is literally just doing DPS to Vindicta as she is now on top of Gorvek and flying around, casting the same flame walls, but more frequently this time. And this is actually the easier part of the fight. And it's pretty straightforward from there. This is a pretty fun boss fight too. It might be it's in contention for my favorite one.
So which one would be your favorite one then?
I don't know. I might have to go with this one. It just felt a little bit more epic because you're actually fighting like a dragon rider. The colors are nice. I like the purple colors of Zaros, and everyone seems to love Zaros, including Jagex.
I was the first one. I was the first Zaros fan before it was cool to be that. I'll say that again.
Zaros hipster.
That's right.
Yeah. But anyway, when it comes to this fight, I would either go range or melee. It's really down to preference. Range really isn't going to do a whole lot for you because you're still going to have to move out of the way for the flame walls. I could see range being useful if you're going to be surging or sidestepping a lot. But otherwise, just doing melee the entire time, keeping the two of them really close to you in the second phase, and also keeping Vindicta close to you in the first phase is really important. DPS, I don't think, besides Gorovic or Gregorovic's minions, I think this is the most important place to focus on DPS because the hard hits from Vindicta can really start to stack up and really make you eat a lot of food. So the faster you get through a kill, the better.
All right. And Colton, you used range for this one?
Yeah, correct.
How did you find that? Because Mr. Bistro just said that your mileage will vary.
It felt fine. This was my favorite fight. It just felt the most smooth and just in terms of how everything flowed. I don't know, I enjoyed all the mechanics. I thought that they were nice. I did not notice the dragon poop, I thought it went well. I enjoyed this boss.
I wish I had a clip that I could just show right now because it caught me by surprise.
I will put that in the video version of that.
It caught me by such a surprise.
All right. How about you, Dave? What'd you think of Vindicta and Gorvek?
I will have to also say that this was my favorite, but this is coming from someone who doesn't like PVM, and I thought this was probably the most simple fight. It was very fluid, and most, if not all, the damage is, for the most part, preventable. You're not just going to take damage from, you know, falling stuff. If you're taking damage, you're standing in something or you're doing something wrong. I really liked it. This will be the one that I farm if I'm going for reputation for the other three. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really like this. It's very straightforward. It's basic. But again, that's just coming from my PVM background. But the mechanics are good. They're pretty standard, but it's implemented well. And I really do like the particle effects with the purple smoke. Haven't really seen something like that in RuneScape. We've had, you know, sort of the particle effects coming off the capes, and we've had some sort of smoke, but this is kind of a different, it's nice to see different textures with the graphics and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
And yeah. This entire dungeon, the heart itself, and I'm sure all the bossing chambers, is really, really well done from a graphical perspective. And I was saying yesterday, it's really a shame that we don't have access to the NXT client on the week of release for this. This is definitely somewhere people are going to want to go when the next NXT beta weekend comes around. So
yeah, I think the new particle engine, if they're still working on that, will look really cool with some of the effects from these bosses here.
Yeah.
All righty.
I agree.
Well, anything on Vindicta and Gorvek then?
Nope. I think we're good.
All righty then. Well, let's move on to some rewards that you can get from these. Obviously, we've mentioned the dormant armor pieces. Colton got a pair of dormant legs and dumped them on the GE, and well, they've still not sold for, what was that, 1.5 million?
Yes, they're still sitting there, lonely, dusty, spiders crawling all over them.
Any other pieces of armor from you guys that you received?
I did not get any, no.
I didn't get any either.
All right. Well, the way this armor works is that you need to combine it with a faction crest, much the same way you put the hilt on a god sword from the first dungeon. So there's that going for it as well. And I think over time we'll see the dormant pieces of armor fall down, but of course the crests will remain high because, you know, that's what we had with your initial God Wars, so I wouldn't see any major reason for things to be different here. Though, if you didn't receive any of the pieces of dormant armor, I guess it's probably kind of rare then, because I think you can go to normal God Wars and stay there for a while and you can get the shards needed to make the God Sword. So, well, I guess the question should be asked, how long did each of you guys kill these for?
I got one kill on each and left.
Oh, okay.
Just to get comp requirements, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I got I think it was 3 kills or 4 on the Furies, and that's when I got the legs intellied out. I got, I think I'm up to nearly 10 on Hellweir and like 5, I think, on the other two.
Oh, okay.
So not too many.
By the way, Colton, dormant anima core legs started off 30 million, dropped to 28.5, and then all the way down to 1.5.
Yeah, because they actually adjusted the GE price to what they were selling.
Yeah, and I mean, okay, that's understandable, and maybe why would they put the price so high at 30 million for these? Like, what's the reason?
They're notorious for doing that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you'd think you'd learn over time, right? Or am I just being too optimistic here?
It's Gagax.
Yeah, you would think.
Like, you
we
have,
can only give them so much.
One can only logic so much.
Yeah, and I mean, I really would like to know if they have a game economist hired, because I think that'd be a really interesting thing to look at with metrics we don't have from the Grand Exchange and person-to-person trades as well, because like it or not, RuneScape is an economy that needs to be treated as such. So
yeah, it would be cool to see something that would track like player trades other than like just giving free stuff away. Cause I mean, I feel like they had that technology when they had the trade limit. Like I don't really think that's invasive, but it's always, you know, interesting to see stuff on the GE, but then it's like, it is traded on the street for completely different prices.
Yeah.
So.
And the crest started at 40 million and they were knocked down to 30 million on the exchange. Some of them even more so. Zamorak one is way down there. So, I mean, I guess that this is par for the course, and that's just a signal it's going to keep going lower and lower and lower as we move through this. But I think that needs to happen at this stage of the game. What do you guys think, for level 80 armor?
What I was saying earlier about why it's dropping so much and why it's not expensive. My initial thoughts, and I can, you know, I'm going to be looking into this more as it develops, but basically right now the armor is completely pointless. It's useless. People want the level 80 power armor for Slayer, because right now the sought after economical, efficient way to slay is God Wars 1 armor, you know, Bandos, Armadillo,
yeah,
all that.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So now with the release of Invention and the recent buff to perks, there is a select few perks that you want to put on your armor, like Genocidal, Dragon Slayer, Demon Slayer, stuff like that. So as you all know or are about to find out, whenever you augment a piece of armor, whether it's degradable or not, it becomes degradable.
Yes.
So basically, having tier 80 non-degradable armor means absolutely nothing for the majority of the people that are going to be wanting to use this armor, even for bossing. It's not just Slayer. Bossing, you want the crackling, you want bite, you know, you want that stuff to be completely optimized. So basically, there's no point to get this armor and augment it, because you can do that with Nex armor and get the extra prayer and get the extra life point boost. So basically, this new armor is completely worthless. And the way they can bring it back is to maybe have it where it drains at the same rate as God Wars 1 armor. So basically, with drain rate reduction 9, level 70 gear drains at 1.25 charges per second, but the tier 80 is 2.5. So basically, if you bring it down, that will bring the prices back up again, because it'll be an advantage to get that level 80 damage and armor with level 70 basically upkeep costs.
Right. And plus, doesn't the tier 80 power armor that already exists from Nex have some special perk to it, if I recall?
I don't know if it's a set bonus, but yeah, I know that
bonus.
It has.
It's a set bonus.
Is it? Okay, well then, yeah, exactly. So basically, that's even more reason why there's literally zero point to have this new armor.
Yeah, what is the set bonus for that anyways, Mr. Beaster? I'm sure you know.
I don't.
Oh, okay.
Not
all
anymore.
Right. See, and I mean, that's the thing.
Or
I
even make it to where it, like, if you do, if you upgrade it to the tier 85 with the special thing, once you get the reputation, maybe add to where it doesn't degrade, or maybe if you do, it just needs to be some sort of perk, because with Invention coming out and with how they want to, you know, integrate all these new updates with the skill, which is the entire reason for the skill in the first place, was a framework to add rewards and stuff. They need to make the benefit in that. They can't have the sole benefit be it's non-degradable, because that literally doesn't matter anymore. If you want to be full optimized, it's going to be degradable because you're going to augment it.
Yeah.
So
and
they need to sort of,
I mean,
check out that facet.
At the same time, there's definitely some interesting stuff going on here that we were told would not happen when the Evolution of Combat came out. If you upgrade it to a refined piece of armor, that is, make it the level 85 version, it receives a life point boost, but still retains its strength bonuses. Now, when Evolution of Combat came out, we were told that tank armor would not get a strength boost, but it would receive a life point boost, whereas the power armor would get a strength boost, but no life point boost, whereas this refined armor has both. So Evolution of Combat came out in 2012. I'm wondering if we're already forgetting what the whole point of Evolution of Combat was for, by, you know, trying to keep things clear to three classes of armor here.
Right. And now I haven't tested this, but I guess one could upgrade it to tier 85 and then augment it, but I don't know if the bonuses for life point prayer, and if there is a set bonus, would outweigh Nex armor. If it does, then I can see that. Otherwise, it's pretty lackluster.
Yeah, well, let's just have a look at what the set bonus is of the Nex, and then we can make a distinction there, because let's see. Let me find this.
Because if you make it 85 and you augment it, I'm pretty sure it stays 85 and it doesn't degrade back down to 80. Because,
right,
you know, if you augment something, you basically freeze it in time, but you're transferring the it, you know, doesn't degrade to dust, but you're transferring the
you're using divine
material
energy instead.
Correct.
Of whatever other thing is for the upkeep, which I mean is understandable, right?
Right. Yep.
So let's have a look at Torva armor here. Where is its set bonus? Let's see. See, this is the kind of thing that we need to know about before going into this, because I can't find anything on the Torva set bonus, but something tells me that the Torva set bonus and other level 80 power armor bonus is not necessarily going to be a reason to not move to level 85 and have both a strength boost and a life point boost.
Right.
And that's just me doing my own version of theory crafting, but that is kind of what I have thought about going forward with this, because if you take a Tetsu plate body and then compare it to whichever piece of armor that you want from here, the Tetsu plate body has an armor value of 477 plus 560 life points for level 85. Now I'm just going to choose the Saren helmet because I assume Saren would probably be the first one that I would get. Let's see. So I want the Crest of Saren and then Anima Core Body of Saren. Then I'm going to make it refined, and we get 442 armor boost and 320 life point boosts at tier 85 armor. So it's not exactly on par with the Tetsu Ports armor, or the Tetsu Body, rather. Tetsu right. Body is still better defensively, but, I mean, 477 versus 442 and plus, you know, the strength bonus. So it's a very good middle ground. So it's ultimately going to determine whether or not I think you want the Nex or the Torva or Pernix or Virtus set boost, right? And that, I think, is going to be our defining characteristic of which one you go for.
Yep.
All right, so pardon that distraction there. Maybe the armor is actually a little bit useful.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think it's definitely needs a little bit more research. Just some numbers, just some rough
some
numbers.
Yeah, some hands-on experience right. with it, because, I mean, this just came out this week, and, I mean, we obviously have not had a chance to play with this armor yet, but at the same time, the Nex gear is kind of expensive on its own when you look at it, right? So
yeah. And I think we could also assume that the market is currently flooded right now, and maybe a lot of people don't want to use that stuff because they're currently leveling the stuff they've already done for Inventor. So maybe their focus is still on that versus even looking at this new stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
And, I mean, when it comes down to it, if you're just doing Slayer, I'm sure the level 80 armor is still fine. And we're talking a very minuscule difference between actual, you know, computed DPS values. But over time, that will make a difference. So I can see why people who want to maximize efficiency are concerned about that. Because remember the calculations I did, moving from level 85 to level 90 weapon shows only a 6.7% decrease. But if you're bossing, that's a lot. So I don't know what you would feel for, you know, moving from God Wars Dungeon 2 armor to God Wars Dungeon 1 Nex armor in this case. But I think there will be a use case for it. I really need to find the set bonuses for the first Torva set. But
yeah, I mean, like, first impressions basically is what we're given right here. But regardless, even if it is better, I think from what we have gathered, it's probably very negligible. I think whatever it is, even if it is better, I think it should still be more than just, oh, I would rather have this set bonus. Like, just give it a little bit more oomph, you know, if it is better, just widen the margin just a couple inches, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, and when this came out, the first thing I looked for was, oh, what's the set bonus for this? And it doesn't exist.
They should make it a little bit more apparent that there is.
Yeah, and I mean that's not necessarily a bad thing. We got a huge combat update with this, but you would expect a set bonus from a level 85 set of armor, I think.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be just make the stats better. Just have some sort of feature that, like, even if it is, okay, I have to choose between do I want this set bonus or this set bonus, rather than saying, okay, do I want to just take 30 points hit here and then have this set bonus? Just make it, balance it out. I mean, that's all it is. So
yeah, exactly. There's also a weapon that gets dropped, a weapon that has tier 80 damage and tier 90 accuracy. It's dropped from each of the four generals, and it floats based on the same discipline that the armor is. That is, the melee weapon and armor comes from Zaros, ranged from Zamorak, magic from Saren, and hybrid from Sliske. So there's the various weapons that you can get. Now, weapon-wise, you think that any of this is going to be interesting? The wand of the Sire Elders from Saren, so it's just a main-handed wand. There's no offhand variety, which surprised me.
I like the direction they're going with it, because we've seen, basically in the past couple years, we've always had, you know, tier 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, going, and then they started filling in tier 85, going in between. You got tier 75, you know, Staff of Armadil 77. They're kind of filling in those gaps. Now they're kind of branching out to where you can have one, you know, you can have accuracy of one, but the damage of the other. So they're sort of splitting that even more, which I like, because you want to hit a lot, but you don't want to drop, you know, 250 mil on a, you know, on a Nox staff, but you want to be able to hit. You know, you're restricted,
yeah, exactly,
to having both. Now you can have one or the other, and it's further diversifying the arsenal for sure.
All right. Blade of Namar and Blade of Avarice from Zamorak. That's a main hand and an offhand variety right there. So one of each. So that's why I asked, should we have a offhand version of the wand, but we don't. And then we also have a Dragon Rider Lance, which comes from the Zaros General. Bali, once again, two-handed, basically a halberd, a modern halberd, with level 90 accuracy and 80 damage. That could be an interesting weapon. And then the Shadow and offhand Shadow Glaive from Sliske, which are ranged weapons, once again, with accuracy 90 and damage 80. So, yeah, I think that one's probably the most interesting to me, and ones I will probably or maybe look into getting, because let's face it, Ascensions at level 90 do need some competition.
Yep.
And I don't exactly want to smith Death Lotus darts at level 85.
I agree.
Yeah. Okie dokie. Anything on the weapons, or should we just leave it at that? Because I think we have covered this quite extensively.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Alrighty. Moving on to the tweaks and fixes then. Once again, fairly sparse this week. Mm-hmm. Nothing too major. First up, players can now opt to skip the puzzle box section of the Easter event.
Boo!
To complete the event.
Yes! Sorry.
But they will, however, need to still complete both puzzles to successfully disassemble the machine after the event for the post-event reward.
You wusses. Do your puzzles, kids. They're good for you. They build character.
It wasn't that hard. It was a basic puzzle box.
I know. It's like the 500k opt-out that they did, or 250 or whatever it was.
It was 500k for Monkey Madness.
Yeah, that payment that they offered. It's just, I don't know. It seems kind of sad. At least it's only an Easter event and not a major quest. It just seems silly that people all have that much. I mean, there are guides online if you're really having that much trouble.
Right.
Just saying.
If you want a real challenge, try the puzzle box that's moving at the end of the quest.
Yeah, I know. That one was fun.
It really was, because you had to first get the pipes in the right position. Then you had to line up the tiles, which had multiple varieties for each one, so that they would be sequential, so that the liquid would flow to the center.
Yeah, I started out like trying to do that and using my typical method for with just the rows, how they work with a normal puzzle box. And then I got to the last two rows, and it was like, oh, my usual method isn't working. I have to work backwards now. And it was a nice mind-bending exercise.
Yeah.
Regardless.
What do you, you Dave and Mr. Bistro think about this removal of a puzzle?
I think it's a standard case of everyone's mad that did it early. Just like we had with the advanced agility courses, everybody got 99 and then it was like, oh, you can get double the XP or Runespan. I mean, it's just, it's the nature of the beast. I lucked out. I haven't done the event yet, so I guess I get to skip a puzzle. So hip, hip, hooray. But I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it's going to happen.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I enjoy the puzzle aspect, so this isn't really affecting me. But I guess if people are complaining about it, JX's main goal is to make sure people are having fun with the game, because that's what games are for.
So I agree with Colton. What? The fact, like, if I don't think they should take stuff out. If you're having a problem, just use a guide. Like, that's what I do with quests. I don't enjoy. I don't enjoy sitting for 4 hours trying to figure stuff out. I just blaze through it with a guide and just walk through. Like, I just want to get it done. If I don't think they should remove a quest. Like, people that like to do it, do it. Keep the puzzles in. If you're having trouble, just use a guide. I don't think they have to take it out, I guess is what I should say. I mean, it happens, but, you know, it is what it is.
Alrighty. Members now have access to another bank booster for free from Solomon's General Store.
Yay. And
so much so that the fact when you first open up your bank, the little plus will be highlighted in gold, so you can just click that and get another free 50 bank slots. That's good. They needed to do this.
Mm-hmm. I think I have so much farming and herblore supplies in my bank at this point that it equals what my bank was as a whole a couple years ago.
Well, that's nice. That's acceptable. That's very acceptable. Members also received six free keepsake keys from their bank whenever they log in this week. So, I mean, I guess they want to push the keepsaking items thing for your own cosmetic overrides, which is nice.
I did not realize that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's right in your bank.
I'm a keepsake. I won't say it, but I think we all know what I'm going to say. But yes, I keepsake quite a bit of my stuff. So,
as do I.
All right. And players can no longer bring weapons and armor to Entrena by using a legendary pet's Beast of Burden ability.
It took them this long to figure that out.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you think about it...
Considering they've been out for like a couple years, it's like, wow, they've been smuggling weapons into Entrena for 2 years and they just caught on.
Yeah, well, Entrena is fairly low-leveled, but...
Yeah.
And also, people who did purchase the Gold Premier Club this year did get 400 rune coins for free. So they did add that in. So I commend them for that.
I complained about that when I got my Gold Premier, so I'm happy that I got that.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, that's something I definitely think Premier Club should include, you know, 400 rune coins. It's a fair thing. You're putting that much into it, so you're bound to want some of the Solomon's cosmetics that do ultimately come out. Anyways, let's move on to some things specifically relating to loyalty points and rune coins. So they're once again changing the way the loyalty point and rune coin system works. And with this, we'll just get this out of the way right now, that there will be a 50% off sale all throughout the month of April on all loyalty point related products, should you want to purchase one. But starting on May 3rd, there will be separate pricing for rune coins and loyalty point purchases. So, they say the reason they're doing this is because the original loyalty point program was to reward players who maintain continuous membership with great rewards. The system encourages the use of loyalty points as a replacement for rune coins, and we feel this is unnecessary since the introduction of bonds.
Bonds! They're the freaking excuse for everything. I'm sorry, this one does... Russell, my jimmies. Continue.
Bonds are the best alternative for obtaining rune coins by allowing you to exchange your in-game gold.
Mm-hmm.
So, read as a nutshell, we want to sell more bonds.
Oh, God. Correct. So, are they getting rid of loyalty?
No, loyalty points will remain for specific loyalty-themed items. So, here's a list of some items in this news posting that you'll be able to get for... loyalty points only. I won't go through all of them here, but here's some examples. The Grass Skirt, the Replica Dragonfire Shield, and God Wars God Sword set. Brutal Claws, Brutal Claws Crossbows, Teddy and Zen, The Breakdance emote, Breaking Wind emote, Crab transformation, Gravedigger, Kick-Sand, Majorat transformation, and RuneScape Through the Ages. Dwarven Challenge Barrel 10-pack and the Party Pack will also be there, as well as some hair overrides for females and males. Outfits including the replicas Arums, Armadils, Bandos, Darok, Dragonplate, Elite Void Knight, Guthans, Infinity Robes, Karls, Metal Plate Armor, Pernix, Torag, Torva, Verak, and Void Knight Armor will all be loyalty point rather than rune coins, so that's nice. The Wicked Pouch will also be moving to rune coins and loyalty points, as well as other preset rentals.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Some skilling animations.
I really like the fact that they are making basically all the retro replica stuff loyalty points, because it makes sense. You want to give people the replica stuff. You know, if they're loyal, they were probably playing when that was, you know, if they want to revert, they can, but they have to have played since then, type of thing. But yeah. I like the way they're going with that.
Also, what looks to be the majority of the titles are going to the loyalty points as well. So there's that. Now you ask, what is going to be rune coins? Well, Citadel cap boosters, beachwear outfits, a whole bunch of other outfits, pet treats. Okay, I don't know why you need that. Bank boosters, keepsake keys, and action bar slots.
Bank boosters are rune coins now?
Yes.
Oh, come on.
Yep. That's the biggest one.
So basically, this month, I'm just going to blow all of my freaking loyalty points on bank boosters before they go to rune coins. So everyone go do that. If you're smart, do that.
Panic.
If you don't have your auras, go get your auras. If you're done with that, get your bank boost. You heard it here first. Do it.
I think I've gotten everything I've wanted from my loyalty points, and I've capped out my bank boosters, so I should be okay.
I try not to cap out my bank boosters because I'm a hoarder, so every time I get more, I just have more crap in my bank, so it's kind of like enabling myself to keep hoarding, but at this point, it's pretty mandatory. I just bite the bullet and get it done. So...
This bothers me. I don't know. This is a complete reversal of what the initial reason for them
combining
integrating
of the two stores was, right? Merging.
Yeah. It was to add an ability for the loyal players to purchase anything, really, except for some exclusive things, with loyalty points. And now they're saying, oh, because bonds... Because there's another way for you
and
guys.
And you're so rich. You're so rich, Colton.
Money.
You're so rich.
Well,
buy it with GP. That's what they want you to say.
Well, yeah. I guess
their fallback.
And someone along the line is paying hand and foot because they're making more profit in the end from the bonds that people are buying, because dollar for dollar, it's more expensive to pay for.
Weren't we just talking about this last week, that Jagex needs another reason for players to purchase bonds?
I guess, but this is a crappy one. And it feels like this is the definition, forgive my political incorrectness, of Indian giving. It's, oh, you want this? We're going to give it to you. Here you go. This is a nice present. Oh, we don't want to. Never mind. I think we'll take that back. I don't know.
It's a prime case of, we're never going to bring back the wilderness and free trade. I always come back to that.
It's right back to that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean,
we need to basically pare it down and realize that bonds are a significant stream of income for Jagex, and they obviously feel the need to increase that revenue stream from the bond side of things, probably just a bit, because they know how effective bonds are in game at membership purchasing, spins, whatever, you name it. So, I mean, even if you can just give a little bit of a hint that says, hey, let's purchase some more bonds to get these cosmetic overrides or whatever might be in Solomon's store, then that is accomplishing what they want to do. But I do agree that this is blatantly obvious here, and I mean at least they're giving us a month to do this. That is one positive thing. So
just real quick, I don't want to, like, you know, make any enemies here, but I support bonds. I really think they've done well for the game. They have probably combated bots more than
and real world
probably
trading.
A lot of the bot nukes. They've really, they've cut down on real world trading and gold farmers, because in pretty much every game where you can sort of buy money, people are going to do that rather than going on some Chinese gold site that's like going to steal your credit card. Like, people will buy it from the original thing, but if you can basically, you know, get membership with it and stuff, and it's like legit way to do it, there's no reason for gold farmers. So that's really helped. I just don't agree with how they're shoving it down people's throats, and they're clearly making themselves look like sellouts.
Agreed.
So anyway.
Yeah, but the question that I'm going to end this discussion on, and it's going to be a simple yes or no answer, is that if it came down to a membership price increase or more bonds, which would you go for? Membership price increase or more bond purchasing like this?
Bonds.
Colton?
Bonds. Okay. I'll admit it, even though it's
the lesser of the two evils.
Yeah, it is.
I'd say bonds as well.
Well, there we go. That just proves why they did this. But I mean, as we have talked about before, we will continue to be vigilant on this. Should anything in Solomon's General Store or on Treasure Hunter, for that matter, prove to be grossly overpowered.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. And also, speaking of Treasure Hunter, they are reworking the rare drop table, and specifically the rare item store from Solomon's, or rather Treasure Hunter. So some old rares are going away, and these include the Tumbleweed, Squirks the Parrot, Scully, the Queen Black Dragon Helmet, the Serpentine Rapier, the Serpentine Two-Handed Crossbow, the Serpentine Wand, and the Kelfine King Helmet. These are all going away, and some new impressive rares are coming into the game, including, you ready for these?
No.
Let's do it.
The Banhammer. The Banhammer. The Balancing Wand. The Twang Crossbow. The Lucky Coin. The Map Hat. The Chic Scarf. The Potion Hat. And the Hype Train. And it's worth noting that the Hype Train, quote, wiggles, jiggles, chats, and gives off plumes of smoke when the update timer is live. And the smoke turns blue and purple as the train gets more excited.
I love the concept. I'm still disappointed it's not the gains train, and it could be directly related to something with rune metrics and the XP you gain. So the higher XP per hour you get, the more it puffs smoke or something. I just think that gains train is used a lot more than the hype train. I feel like they could have released some sort of crown with like Lord of the Weight going with the hype thing. But that's just me. I don't work for Jagex.
Like, are we really at a point where the game updates are generating a hype train that we need an item for this? Or is this just wishful thinking on Jagex's part?
It's like, let's release an item for future items that'll be within the item that we're going to release this item with. It's like, oh my God. I mean, it's funny. It's humorous. I'll give him that. But it's like, oh gosh.
Well, I'd have to say, like, in the article that's coming out for me soon, I actually brought up a little tidbit about how Hype Train has actually changed over the past couple of years on how Jagex goes about releasing their big updates. So something has changed, and I think that's what's warranting this.
All right. Also worth noting that rares in the rare item store are on sale, so that if you do have some rare items, tokens that have been stacking up for a while, you can utilize them and get some rares that are on sale. So I might go for a golden cane, but we'll see. We'll see. And you can also have random rewards given to you from the limited old or new rares pile, depending if you feel like gambling your points away. So,
has anyone ever done that?
No, I have not. I have not. And I mean, I was thinking, oh, I could do this, and I could, or it could just go with what I want. But I don't know if I want to take a chance and risk it.
I wish you could recolor some of these items, but
which ones in particular?
Well, just looking at it, like the Chic Scarf, like it would be cool. Like, what if I don't want red? What if I want blue? What if I want green? Like, I feel like there could be some that you could recolor.
Yeah, that would be good. I mean, there's already recoloring services for various items in the game.
Yeah, you can recolor your gnome scarf and your Robin Hood hat and stuff. I just think I don't think everything has to be recolored because that would take away. But I think there's a few items that would be nice to recolor. And if you could recolor the scarf, I'd probably buy the scarf. But you know, it is what it is.
All righty. Anything else on this Treasure Hunter Rare refresh?
No, seems pretty harmless. I mean, if you want to make your keys most efficient, then one of the best ways to do that is to go to the, if you have like Hearts of Ice to use, go to the Hearts of Ice interface and click freeze all yellow, all the yellow gem rewards, because it'll freeze all of the yellow, which is, I think, uncommon, all but the current promotion, which is the rare item tokens. And so if you basically, how it works is if it'll, the way Treasure Hunter works is it'll decide what rarity you get and then from there decide which item you get. And so if you limit it to just that one selection, if you roll the yellow, which is fairly likely and fairly frequent, then you will automatically get the 200 rare item tokens.
Oh, all right.
So, yeah, use them that way.
Thank you for that tip.
No problem.
And there is one piece of final RuneScape-related news that we must discuss, and that is the behind-the-scenes for April 2016. And April is going to be bringing us astounding updates, including including mounts, which has been in development for 18 months, and Rune Vision, which has been in development for 4 years, and entirely, there is going to be an entirely month themed based on cabbage in RuneScape, including some new unique drops like Savoy Knight equipment or the Savage Cabbage special attack.
I wonder how Draz is taking this.
Yeah, I mean, this is the month he would be up, jumping up and down for, but I hate to break it to everyone. The date in which we are talking about this is April 1st.
Say it ain't so, Shane.
I am so disappointed.
I wanted
to be able to teleport anywhere on the map with my horsey.
With your horsey?
Yeah, they said the horse with the...
Oh, right, the mount. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, okay, that's kind of funny, and they even did an entire video about it. I would just recommend watching this video because you can actually see the J-Mods in studio fighting using their JAG motion. And basically, they said it lets you feel RuneScape combat and feel the pain that's involved with it. So, and I haven't been able to look, but is this Terrorbird mount going to be an actual little thing, cosmetic override for your player? Or... because they did show a thing in Solomon Store, but I was unable to get into it.
I'm not sure. I'll have to look into it.
Well, it looks like they've put time into actually developing the model for it, so I'm sure that's an item for it.
Yeah, because, I mean, that is as close as you can get to a mount, so, I mean, you might as well, right? but JAG motion looks really interesting, and as well as the fighting relating to combat and... showing how this is all going to work. And well, I think that what happened here, they actually ended up hurting each other when they were testing this out. So that,
slapping against
you. Yeah.
As you can see, we're still fixing some of the bugs in the PvP department.
Oh, God. Oh, he's bleeding.
As an extra incentive.
As you can see, they are fixing bugs in the PvP department and they drew blood. So they did have some fun making this, but I am eagerly anticipating what the real April behind the scenes will look like tomorrow when this comes out. But in the meantime, great fun indeed.
They actually, like, I'm not going to lie, I thought that this was the actual behind the scenes for just a second.
Same here. For the first two sentences, then I'm like, all right, never mind.
And then it was like, once they actually started talking about the mounts, I was like, oh, it's April Fool's.
Yeah, and I feel like we had mounts before for April Fool's, but... Did
we also had the Jag Motion, basically, which Rune Vision is a is an homage to that. So
right, all right. Huh. Oh, that's convenient. The Solomon's General Store page is giving a 404 error. So
yeah, it's been doing that. Yeah, that's the joke.
Anyways, that's it for RS updates this week. Hopefully, you guys found that enjoyable and stimulating. We're going to move on to questions right now.
Let's do it.
First one's an audio question from Parnassius, directed specifically at Colton.
G'day, guys. It's Parnassius here. And since it is Colton's last show, this question is for him. Firstly, thank you for your contribution to the show. You've been a great co-host and a natural fit with Shane. I'm sure everyone joins me in wishing you the very best, and hopefully we will see you as a guest throughout the year. Anyway, moving on to the question. Has being on the show changed your views on any aspect of the game, and has it opened you to up to anything else you previously thought you would not do? Again, thanks for taking the time to answer my question and for the great show, and we will see you in-game. Happy RuneScaping all.
The answer is no. nothing has changed. I honestly came to this show as the co-host, at least, feeling very much the same way. I mean, I don't know if anything, my views have been more confirmed, because I typically see eye to eye with Shane on a lot of the subjects we cover. And if anything, the show has made me go out and do some things that I wouldn't have done before a little sooner, and try and poke and prod at updates that I usually would try and leave alone, which has been an enjoyable process. But the show has only done good. It's just been a lot of fun. I can't really say that it's completely changed me or anything like that, but I've had a good time.
Yeah, and I mean, it definitely, I think you would be answering different to this question if you had presided over being co-host during one of the more controversial times of RuneScape history. So
why do you say that?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a balance between experiencing the update, providing commentary on it, and informing the listeners about what the update was, but you also have to take into account that there's a whole community associated with these updates, and they have their own thoughts and opinions as well about this. And what we try and do is we try and find the alternative viewpoint that the community may have missed, either rightly or wrongly. So I don't know if you had any revelations like that during your 4 months here.
Not in particular, I guess.
Yeah, see, and I guess that just comes with the territory for me of doing it so long.
Yeah, so I guess I got lucky.
Yeah, you did, and that's why I said controversial time. Would have probably changed that answer. So, I mean, I don't think there's any way we can extend this out to our other two guests this week, but I'll just ask you guys, you guys are on the show for a week at a time. One of you guys is going to be sticking around with me. We'll explain who that is later. But do you guys do anything different for the weeks that you're on the podcast? Yes, no, maybe so?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, whenever I am featured on the podcast, I do take a little bit of extra time to sort of go into the updates and sort of do some research, form a little bit of an opinion. Sort of analyze it a little bit more rather than just going in cold turkey. But yeah, I mean, I think it does impact the way I view an update, because I will look at it from, you know, all three sides type of thing. And then, you know, just back up and be as neutral as possible, and then I can form my opinion rather than just having something come out and then I either rage or I love it, and then it, you know, goes back and forth. So yeah, I definitely think it, you know, it affects at least my view on the game. But, you know, as well as just since I've been streaming, you know, it just helps me hone my speaking ability and my engagement and stuff like that. So I think all around it really does help me improve. So
yeah, and see, that's another thing I do. I don't look at what the community is saying, whether it be official or unofficial channels, because I don't want to, you know, have a warped opinion. The only community feedback I am a part of is the Friends Chat Bits Bytes and the Clan Chat Clan Quest. That's it. So, how about you, Mr. Bistro? Anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, I don't think it's really changed the way I see things, mostly because I've been doing commentary on RuneScape updates for several years, even before I had my YouTube channel and the couple other people that were working on that channel with me. But it does give me an excuse to almost like force myself into doing content that I wouldn't normally feel like I want to do. And 90% of the time, leaving it having had a little bit of fun. So I get that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a great thing for all involved. So hopefully that can provide some insight to all the listeners out there about the production side of things and how we ultimately approach this, whether or not that's different from you guys. I don't know. Let us know. And the next question is from Trekkie. So with all the talks of gods and deities, here's a question that will make you think about the lore a bit more. If you were able to remove a god from the history of RuneScape, which one would you pick? Also, what would the changes to history? What would the changes to history be if that had actually happened? I.e., if Sarah Doman had never existed, who would be Zamorak's enemy? Have fun with this one. So let's
remove Guthix for all chaos to ensue.
Well, yeah, there's an example right there. Cause,
or life to never come.
I mean, both those things could end up happening if Guthix were never around. But Colton, do you have a... You're the resident lore expert here. Do you have a surefire thing that you could say you could remove and you would know exactly what would happen? Or do you have a preference of what you could remove?
It's tough because everything sort of plays so smoothly into just the larger whole of what the mosaic of lore has become. If I were to say... Now, the thing is that if Sarah Doman hadn't existed, Zamorak's enemy would have just been everyone else, because Zamorak's enemy was really originally Zaros when they joined, when the Majorat joined with Zara or with the Desert Pantheon. So
Betrayal.
I guess I might choose Sarah Doman because he would have the least repercussions in terms of changing how everything's gone. I would like to see a world without Guthix, because what would have happened had would anyone have ever tried to find this out? Because eventually, one can assume that because, especially Zaros, began his world hopping sometime after his creation, when Mom created him, he started hopping from world to world from Frenesque. He would have eventually happened upon Gilanor, and that would have likely put Zaros in the place of Guthix as basically the gatekeeper of Gilanor. And I feel like he would have taken a much more active role in who comes in. Would he have tried to colonize the place just for himself? Would he have let other gods in? I don't know. I think it would have been interesting.
So this is if you remove Zamorak, right?
No, if you remove Guthix.
Oh, okay. All right.
That would be the one I'd be most interested in. If I could remove anyone, I would not remove anyone because I like the way things are. But it's nice to ponder upon alternate realities.
Yeah, it certainly is, and I think that's where Trekkie was going with this one. how about you, Dave?
Does Sliske have a counterpart?
I mean, maybe as an Adra with the Majorat, if you don't call Sliske a god.
Isn't he, though, or not?
it's still debatable.
That's
still really
the question
don't know.
We're going to find out at the end of the quest series. So, and
I was going to say him just because he doesn't really have like a sort of a counter. I mean, Guthix is Guthix. You have Sarah, Zami. You have Xeros and Saren. I would say Sliske, but we don't know if he's a god or not. I can take the easy way out and say Brassica Prime because it's not really even funny. Like, I know it's silly.
Did you listen to last week's episode?
I did not.
He's behind it all, don't you know?
He's the most powerful. So if we get rid of him, then the godless prevail. Is that how? Yeah, just mass chaos. So technically, that's the caveat. You get rid of the most facetious one, and everything crumbles. So I'll go with that. I'll stick with that because I'm not much of a lore hound. So I'll take the easy way out and take the joke out.
I don't know if you want to say that after last week's episode, but okay.
I'm not really sure. Like, what is their fascination with cabbage? Like, is that like something like funny?
Just a Gower Brothers homage. It's a joke. I
knew it was like something funny, but I didn't know if it was like a sort of a just a cultural thing, like, you know, in over in the UK, is that sort of like offensive, you know, or whatever. But
I'm not sure about culturally, but Draz has a really interesting theory about it's really tinfoil hat.
But that is his existence as it is. That is Drax's existence as it is. Yeah. You give him data and he can come up with a theory on something.
That's a good point.
So, all right. How about you, Mr. Bistro? Who would you eliminate if you could?
Well, on one side, I would get rid of Marimbo because no part of me liked Marimbo. But being more serious, I would almost want to get rid of Armadyl because I would be curious to see what would happen if more chaos and warlike gods were in the fray than more order-like ones. Like,
so you get rid of the RuneScape social justice warrior.
Then what would have happened?
Right.
And Zamorak never would have stabbed Xaros with the Staff of Armadyl, and would Xaros still have his empire? Oh. I'd be interested.
That's a big one right there, actually, now that you mentioned it. So
very impactful.
Yeah. All right. And for me, I would... Like we said, we don't know if Sliske is a god or not, but that's where I was going when this question was first asked, because mainly from a Jagex point of view, I would have liked to have seen what they could have done with the game lore going forward, had they not decided, or had they not had the death of Guthix, where would this whole thing have gone after that? I mean, I'm just saying it mainly from a Jagex point of view, not necessarily an in-game lore perspective. I'd just like to see what Jagex would have done differently rather than, you know, killing Guthix off.
Yeah, you gotta wonder if they just never would have involved the god storylines as they've come to be known today, and it would have just stayed
exactly. Or, you know, would we have just gone straight on to the elder gods? Because I could see an elder god discovery happening, you know, because they had been mentioned before.
But then, who would save us? Would Guthix save us?
Maybe. I don't know.
Interesting.
Or Xaros even. Or Saren, maybe, because
he wouldn't have been able to come back. We wouldn't have been able to get to him.
Well, Saren. Let's just go with Saren then, because I mean, we did ultimately put the Elf City back together, regardless of whether or not Guthix was dead.
But would the edicts have prevented her from even being put back together?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm intrigued.
Because the Shatter Order. She shattered herself rather than be banished. So.
Yes.
Very interesting. Okay. Yeah, so maybe in my perspective, we would just end up with a very boring RuneScape storyline. Anyways, thank you for the questions, both of you. Very good questions this week from Parnassius and Trekkie. If you guys want to send your own questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail on the Google Voice number, which is 571-57-BNB or 571-572-2632. Or if for some reason you're a creature that prefers text messaging, you can send a text message with your question to that number as well. It's an American number, so be mindful if you're from outside the country.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on to tech news then. So last week we talked a bit about the potential of the FBI being able to get into the San Bernardino terrorist attacker's iPhone.
And week 5 update of your San Bernardino iPhone.
We're done after this going forward.
I'm teasing.
In my view, the story is done now. The FBI did successfully access the terrorist attacker's iPhone without Apple's help, and because of this, the entire court case just disappears. The FBI is not compelled to tell Apple how they did it, and any data that they got off the phone can be used in the investigation. But with that being said, it raises a lot of questions as to how this happened. I know there are various ways to get into an iPhone 5C without, necessarily having the password or passcode. I don't know which of those methods they would have done, or even if they, decided to break the password or passcode on the device, or they went for, a raw data approach and are decrypting it by way of brute force. I don't know what they did, but at the end of the day, the data has been accessed, and this case is no more. So, and it's also worth noting that they did hire the Israeli security firm that we mentioned last week to enable this to happen. So, And I did write my monthly Informer article on this subject at informer.rsbnb.com if you want to hear my thoughts about this entire process from all the way back in December to this and what both sides were ultimately after, and some thoughts going forward about how you might want to protect yourself, if you can, or if that matters to you. But I'll leave that for the listeners to go read. I would highly recommend it. But the story at the end of the day is to not worry about whether or not your iPhone is going to be breakable by law enforcement, because most of us are using devices newer than the 5C, I'd imagine. So, anyways, any thoughts on this now that the FBI has officially got into the phone?
Anyone who would be surprised by this, I'd say, is kind of a fool, because we've been breaking and making tech for years. So this just goes with the curve of technological advancement. It didn't surprise me that they would do this. The government tried to do the easy way around. They couldn't, so they just did it themselves.
Yeah. And, I mean, to be fair, the 5C is not a complicated device to break compared to the newer ones out there. So there's that going for it, too.
Yep.
Anything else from either you, Dave, or Colton?
Nope. I'm glad that they were able to... I think it was good that they were able to access it, because... Although I've said previously I'm not a huge fan of all the Big Brother stuff, but I think in this case and in cases like it, it's important to for national security to have access to that sort of thing. So I'm glad that they were able to settle it.
Exactly. All right, something else happened this week, and Microsoft had their yearly developer conference, which is entitled Microsoft Build, and they made a number of announcements at this conference. Lots of interesting things from the developer side, but a number of interesting things to consumers and end users as well, starting with an increasing presence of artificial intelligence by way of bots. So basically Microsoft says this, that their bots are going to be the next step after applications. And the example they give is that you'll be able to add bots to Skype to help you with various kind of things, like, for example, trip planning or music listening or watching videos. So Skype will have integration for that. And third-party developers will also be able to integrate the AI platform by way of bots into their applications should they want to. So, for example, during a Skype demo, a bot from Cups and Cakes asked for an address to complete a delivery. Cortana brokered the conversation and gave the user a map with updates on arrival time. When asked to add an appointment to a calendar, Cortana will automatically do that as well, filling in location states and also allowing users to book a hotel room. So as you can see, these kind of bots written with third-party applications will help out basically making Cortana smarter, which is Microsoft's version of Siri that now exists on Windows 10. So this framework comes to developers and third-party applications through Cortana. Also, to enable this further, there's going to be a big update to Windows 10 this summer entitled the Anniversary Update. Lots of interesting things coming to it, including support for biometric authentication that is using fingerprints to unlock devices and websites. Also, universal Windows applications between Windows phones, the Windows 10 platform, and Xbox. And also something called Windows Ink, which is basically a way to annotate, you know, images or maps on Windows, except the same bot framework will recognize what you're writing and convert it to intelligent data. So, for example, if you draw a point between two places on a map, the bot will tell you the distance or how to get directions between those two points. Or if you're using ink, aka writing a sticky note by hand on your surface, it'll convert it to text and allow you to, you know, store that reminder in Cortana. So basically just an advancement of the entire Windows 10 platform that we got last year. I assume you guys are all on Windows 10, yeah?
Yep, I actually just upgraded on my desktop 2 weeks ago. Oh. I've had it on my laptop for a while, but I just stuck with 7 for a while on my desktop, but I finally switched over. So.
Excellent. That's good. And, of course, for the developers and programmers, the Linux command line will be coming to Windows 10.
Yeah.
That's Bash.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Colton and Dave, are you guys – I assume you guys aren't excited as – me and Mr. Bistro on this.
No. I don't have much of an opinion. I'm not educated in it, so I can't really speak.
That is an amazing update, and when everyone at my work heard that, they immediately went into talks about getting the switch done as soon as possible.
Yeah. It's going to be able to run native Ubuntu Linux binaries, which basically means that it will run console-based Linux applications on Windows. For anyone out there who has an interest in that. You and I can talk later more about this. I just have a couple of concerns about whether or not this will have, you know, the full Bash feature set that it has on Linux. But if it does, that's going to be very groundbreaking. Namely, I/O redirection pipes and that kind of stuff. So,
I couldn't imagine it not having pipe.
Yeah. So, remains to be seen. But also, Microsoft is integrating gaming across Windows and Xbox. So, for example, if you have Forza on your Xbox, you'll be able to play it on your PC or create a PC game or convert a PC game to be played on your Xbox. So it's going to be a truly cross-platform experience going forward with Windows 10 and the Xbox, which I think is just stellar.
I absolutely love that, especially when I can integrate it into my streaming, have a more streamlined setup. That's
going
to be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, if you think of all the games on the PC, and some of them, I mean, are designed to be played with a keyboard and mouse, right? But sometimes you just want to relax and sit on the couch and play on a large screen and play through your Xbox. So it's going to be great to have that going both ways. I really like that. And I think that this kind of will hopefully, providing these applications get out the door on the right foot, encourage more people to get Xboxes if they're Windows users and upgrade to Windows 10. So,
I think this is a huge, huge win for Windows 10, and it's really going to show a very big boost in its support when it comes to commercial use. Which is quite a change from Windows 8.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Windows 8 had the ideas there, but it just wasn't implemented properly. So here's hoping that this will continue to be good progress going forward. And as we all know, only 3% of the RuneScape population is using Windows 10 currently. So we need to get them over to that. That's something that we need to do. But Anyways, anything else on Microsoft's announcements this week that jumped out at anyone before we move on to our final tech news story?
Nope, don't think so.
Nope.
Alrighty then. Well, there's some absurd level of excitement going on this evening as Tesla, the electric car company, is about to unveil its Model 3, which is apparently going to be an electric car that has a range of around 350 kilometers, give or take, for a price of $35,000 US. Mm-hmm. And today is the day you can put the $1,000 deposit on it. So, I don't know. I think that, you know, if you're looking at any kind of remote commutes or you're looking to use this car in a remote fashion, this still is not at the level of performance that you need in order to be able to get around it. And also the fact that $35,000 is downright steep for an electric car that is basically confined to the cities.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is just the problem with electric cars today. They're only affordable to the super rich or people who, you know, feel that they have some need to get one of these to show that, you know, they're not a polluter. So,
yeah, I mean, the saving is pointless because the person that buy it, the person that bought it is not trying to save money, clearly. Like, it's, you know, that's not really the point of it. It's pretty much a statement at that point.
Exactly.
If it was really supposed to save money, it would be very affordable and it would also save money. It wouldn't be steep and, you know, be sort of a social icon.
Well, Elon Musk has a much bigger picture for the Tesla brand in general, which would drive more people to get a Tesla with an infrastructure of charging stations throughout the United States as a goal in the future. And the Model 3 is so important because this is the model that has brought the price down of a Tesla significantly from the other two.
Significantly. And I want to say that the others were $100,000 plus, right?
I think
yes.
So,
I don't know. I mean, we have technology that works, that can reduce emissions. We have technology that can, you know, go hybrid gas electric. But this is, I mean, I'm not saying that this is not the future, but it's certainly not mainstream right now. And it is still prohibitively expensive to be at all efficient for anyone who, you know, needs it to go far distances. So I wonder personally how many years off we are from an electric car that, you know, has the same range as a gas car and the same cost practically. So I don't know the answers to those, but those are two questions to ask. Also, what happens when components fail on these cars? How much does that cost to repair? How much does it cost to recycle the huge batteries? Is that going to cause more of a stain on the environment than refined gas emissions do? That kind of thing. So I think it's still very early on in the stage for this, and it is just a way of having a, you know, a green status symbol, to put it that way.
Yeah, I'd say it's early on, but these steps do need to be made to move away from the carbon emissions. So that is good.
Okay. Well, I mean, prohibitively expensive still, but I guess for any listeners out there who want to sink a $1,000 deposit, that's the time to do it, and you won't get it until at least the late end of 2017. So, anyways, that just happened today, so I thought we would mention that in here because it is part of technology going forward. Alrighty. Shall we move on to the Skill of the Month update?
We shall.
I don't see why not.
Yeah, big shocker this week. While it had appeared as though Dave was in first place, you have been bumped to second.
I have.
This week, Sorensen 57 gained a whopping 40.4 million XP in invention.
Madman.
In one day. So basically, he had been saving up for the entire month and got all of his XP in one day. And Dave, you're still in second with 20.8 million XP, and Parnassius is in third with 13 million XP. Undoer is in fourth place with 10.6, and Colton, you've been dumped to fifth.
I was hoping for a top three finish. I was trying so hard, and then all of a sudden, I checked on, I think it was the 28th, and all of a sudden, bam, and plus Undoer sort of did a small similar thing. Undoer hadn't gained just about anything until the end, and he did
I've got about 11 mil stored up in my bank that I was going to DM tonight. But I mean, it's fine. I can say it now because this isn't going to go live, and it's not going to matter because nobody can get it out. But anyway, yeah, I still got quite a chunk. But Sorensen outdid me, so I touche. I got him last month, so he got me last month, so we're even. So it's all good.
Were you doing combat, Dave?
No, I wasn't. Well, I was for the first like week or so. And then I saved it up.
Then the update happened.
And the update happened, so I've just been doing fishing, which is a lot more laid-back.
And I mean, you haven't done too bad for just doing fishing. So
right.
Using the crystal rod or the rod-o-matic?
I used crystal rod for the first 10 and realized it was way more expensive, so I've been using rod-o-matics ever since.
All right.
So.
And I mean, that's a fairly respectable XP rate for just doing skilling at fishing.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I mean, Colton, you and I had that as one of our fears that it wouldn't be as fast. But obviously it's fast enough, right?
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's not bad.
But it makes up for the fact that it's AFK. So like I've been doing, I've been playing Xbox and I just had this on in the background as to where, you know, I could go for 2 hours and do combat and then I get burnt out and be bored just, you know, staring at RuneScape. I can literally be on this for like 6 hours at a time and be doing other things, you know. So it kind of is almost even more XP for people that just want AFK. So
right. All right. We do also have some achievements this week, two of them. Canard, which is translated to duck in French, got 99 invention on the 28th. And, of course, Sorensen 57 with that huge boost. Huge jump in XP, got 120 invention on the 28th as well. So congratulations to the both of you with those achievements.
Congratulations.
Yeah, you knew there was going to be a 120 involved when you saw that huge jump, right?
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
So,
sheesh.
Good job, everyone. Good job. And comes the time of the show when we do pick of the week. So, Colton, you decided that since this is your last regular scheduled show, you would do pick of the week for us. So what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, why not? And as I say farewell for now, I'll give you something to hold on to with that really relates to me again. I don't know if you guys got enough from the previous wine-related pick of the week, but if you haven't yet, you really should check out winefolly.com. It's got all kinds of stuff. I mean, my favorite part of it is the blog. It's a fairly simplified yet scientific look at all aspects of wine, be it geographical or chemical, things like that. It's not overly complex. It's easy for beginners to latch on to the stuff that they discuss and talk about, but it's also in-depth enough to really pique the interest of someone who's interested in that sort of topic. There's a book which is also great for beginners, which is just this website, the way that – not the website, the infographics that the authors have put together and that they have on just about every single page of this book. They're gorgeous and if you like infographics and you like wine, you'll love this site and this book. Just because it's just so beautiful to look at, so much information that's just visually pleasing to the eye, and so it's just go check it out. You really have to see it for yourself because it's hard to describe how visually appealing that this book is. Also, in relation to the infographics and things like that, they have some really cool, like wine educational prints, really neat looking maps, things like that for people like me who are into cartography and things like that and yet also enjoy wine and things of that nature. So A lot of really cool stuff all over this website. It's really chock full of anything from beginner to expert. And basically just if you have any interest in wine, it's a great place for anyone.
Yeah, I got the flavor profile one up right now. Chardonnay, Sémillon, Marsanne, and then it basically has an interesting graphic about how each of the flavors of those is whether it's very little, somewhat present, pronounced, or bold and intense. So
it's really good at giving you primers on the basic tasting guides to how to get different notes in wines and where those notes come from. Do they come from the grapes themselves? Do they come from the winemaking practices? Do they come from the actual aging? And the difference between, say, a Chardonnay from Australia versus a Chardonnay from California versus a Chardonnay from the Côte Chalonnais in Burgundy of France. It's really interesting how they go in depth, and it's a really deep subject if you want to go deep. But if you want just surface level stuff, there's that for you too. It's really good at breaking it down to the basics.
Alrighty, that sounds good. Citrus fruit. I didn't know wines could be fruity.
Oh yeah. In fact, that's one of the main notes that you'll see. And especially younger wines is a fruity note, be it like apples, pears. That
what do you mean
stuff.
By younger?
Because it's
like
hard to explain
aging it. Or
yes, oh, okay. Because especially with red wines, basically the younger the wine, the more fruity and light the aroma and flavor will be. The fruitiness fades as it ages and is taken over by more ancillary notes. That come from, in reds at least, with oak aging and bottle aging, like leather, like almost like meaty smells, like bacon, marmalade. It's really interesting how, and this site, the blog especially, helps go in depth on how the chemical reactions that create those sorts of flavors in the bottle and in the barrel.
Check it out. So that's winefolly.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So as Colton mentioned, this is his last regular scheduled show. We'll probably be seeing him for Quest Weeks and other important lore weeks as the year moves on. But you guys have probably been wondering who exactly is going to be replacing Colton. Well, we had two people on the show this week, so it's going to be one of them. And I am pleased to announce that the person who is replacing Colton for the next quarter of 2016 is going to be someone that you have been listening to for the past hour. And yeah.
Way to ruin the excitement there, Chase.
Well, I'm just trying to extend it a little bit longer. A little bit longer. A little
Stop
bit more.
Drumming.
It's going to be Dave.
It is. Shane cannot get rid of me no matter how hard he tries. It's a true story.
I just wanted to extend that a little bit. But tell us a bit about yourself and why you feel you're going to be the great asset to replace Colton.
I'm very honored that I was selected. Shane approached me, and of course I jumped on the opportunity since I've been a guest on probably more than 10 episodes since I've been a member of the site. Been playing RuneScape since 2004. I've been a member of the forums and the community since about 2006 or 2007. I kind of lurked around before I actually made an account, so I know my forum profile says like 2007, but I've been around for quite a while. I'll be approaching my 10-year anniversary with the community next year, actually. I've really have just seen so many people come and go, whether it be staff or friends, you know, just sort of seen the cycles in and out. I've been listening to the show for quite a while. Love RuneScape, love tech, love talking, love analyzing. I'm really looking forward to being able to look into the tech side of things and just the updates more than I actually do. Even when I am sort of taking a break from RuneScape, it'll, you know, still have me coming back and analyzing and discussing. Rather than just being a guest, I can, you know, bounce everything right off Shane and we can just keep going forward with things. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, hopefully we can keep it spicy, and we'll see where it goes from there. So spicy.
And of course, you are a Skiller.
I am a Skiller, yes.
And one thing that really intrigued me about you and pushed me over the edge was the fact that you just started streaming recently. So I thought, and the discussion you and I had when you came to me to get my opinion on whether or not you should start streaming was something along the lines of, I think that you felt that that kind of stream wasn't being done yet in the RS3 community.
Right.
And in much the same way, we're trying to do things here, as we mentioned, providing other aspects of the update to the community that might not be thought of elsewhere. So I just thought that would be a natural fit for this quarter going forward. And I think we're going to have some pretty interesting updates to discuss.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
But you will be with me for the next 3 months. And then after that, we'll take it from there. It's going to be very interesting. So I'm going to ask you first, what have you been up to this week on RS?
RS has really been, the past month, pretty mindless. I really have just been sitting at, you know, Perf Waterfall and then doing other things. That's RuneScape related. Pretty much just AFKing, so nothing too crazy. I did God Wars when it came out just to get my boss kills. You know, it's just it's back and forth between fishing and then buying stuff to disassemble to make Rotomatics. But that's been my RuneScape, you know, for the past month or so. But I've actually picked up The Division on Xbox, and I've been playing that quite a bit, sort of passing the time while I'm doing Invention. And I've been doing a lot of work on my car as well. So that's kind of what I've been up to. But I'm hopefully after this big drop, after I get all this Invention XP tonight, I should probably be on the home stretch to 120, and then I can knock out the last few requirements for comp, and then I'll be cruising, and I can, you know, sort of explore more stuff on stream and stuff like that. So we'll see where it takes us. But anyway.
All right, sounds good. How about you, Mr. Beaster? Anything eventful happening in your RuneScape week?
Almost identical to Dave. Been doing a lot of fishing recently. It's really simple and mindless, and I can catch up on some of the other stuff that I'm missing on the internet. And God Wars definitely took up the later portion of this week and getting that article out and ready. But that's about all I've been up to.
Yeah. All righty. And Colton, how about you? How was your RS week this week, besides God Wars, which I think.
Yeah, it's been God Wars and fishing for me. That's all I've been doing. I mean, just grinding away. I've been wondering when I'm going to stop with Invention and go back to my Elite Clue grind. So who knows? I might go back to that soon. But yeah, that's what I've been getting myself up to.
Alrighty.
Man, the next time I'm on the show, I might be married by then. That's
well,
crazy.
Yeah, depends, and that's coming quick.
All right.
So
just had that realization.
Yeah, see? Is that a happy realization, though?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, good. Just checking. Anyways, as for me this week, I have been training Invention as well. Got to level 47, I believe. I've been doing the woodcutting aspect of it. Largely with crystal trees. Also been throwing some magic trees in there just, you know, to get some magic logs, since you do need to disassemble short bows and gems or jewelry in order to make the equipment siphons, which is the way I've been doing things. I haven't bought anything yet for Invention to disassemble, so it's all being done outside of materials that I gathered. So that's why I'm spicing it up a bit with the magic logs here and there. And to use that massive pile of flax that I have sitting in my bank. Which I don't know where it came from, but it's over 900. So.
Over 900.
That was not intentional, but I'll take it.
I was going to say.
It's close. We're one digit off.
There you
yeah,
go.
Yeah. But aside from that, just checked out God Wars Dungeon 2 and should probably start farming. So, again. But. Anyways, I think that's about it, unless there's anything anyone would like to add on to this episode.
I think that's just about it. I wish you guys the best of luck putting up with me and my rambling on the next 3 months. It's going to be a journey, my friends, but I can't wait. I hope you guys are excited as I am.
All righty. Well, thank you, Colton, for the past 3 months of, well, 2 months, because we took January off of co-hosting with me. That was fun.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've enjoyed every moment of it.
Same for me. Same for me. And Mr. Bistro for joining us and filling us in about all the combat and intrinsicities. That's a big word of God Wars Dungeon 2.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here and sharing your time with us. And we will see you all next week.
See you next week, guys.
Bye.
Farewell, everyone.